Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to My Millennial Property. Emily Wallace here with John Pidgeon. And today we are asking the question, are you a little bit too lazy to do the research? Are you a bit too lazy to be out and about searching for properties, traipsing through open homes on a Saturday and trying to work out what on earth is actually going on? Maybe you're not actually lazy. Maybe you simply just don't have the time. And let's be honest, time is one thing that we struggle to make more of, or it's almost impossible to make more of unless you outsource something. I mean, you're hungry, you order Uber Eats, someone brings it to you, you want to buy a property, you want that property delivered by someone who knows what they're on about. I don't know if that analogy makes sense, but we're going to roll with it. We're going to unpack property professionals, when is a good time to use them, how to use them, and I guess some key identifiers on establishing what sets apart a good one from a great one. So let's get into it.
Good word, traipsing.
Traipsing, yeah.
Yes, to walk reluctantly, it's called.
Oh, did you Google that in the meantime?
I Googled it in the break. Yeah, look, it's a common theme out there in general life, I think, isn't it? It's like we sometimes want to take the easy or most efficient option to get something done, and so many people come to me and they would come to you saying the same things. I'm an engineer, or I'm a doctor, or I'm a teacher, or I'm a nurse. That's what I'm good at. That's what I'm going to continue to be good at, and I'm going to outsource the rest of my life, whether that be building a house, whether it be getting a buyer's agent, whether it be using an accountant, whether it be using a solicitor to draw up contracts or create wills. Like, we just can't be an expert in all fields, can we?
Yeah, you can't be a jack of all trades. Jack of all trades, master of none, as the saying goes. And yeah, we do live in a culture where outsourcing is very accepted. And I think the mindset of someone who does outsource is someone who is very clear on where their strengths lie and outsources the rest. I'm all for it. I do a lot of it in my personal life, and I know a lot of millennials who are of that mindset, and I think it's a great way to be. The question then begs, how do you ensure you're outsourcing to the right person for what you want?
Yeah, that's right. And we, before we go into that, I feel it's like a shield of armor where you've got protection in all areas. You know you've got this base covered. You've got this corner of your life covered because you've got an expert in the corner that specializes in that on a daily, weekly level. Some people can't get their head around the cost of outsourcing that, but I firmly believe that they pay for it down the track in some way, shape, or form, much more than what they would have if they'd outsourced and paid for a professional's help in the first place. An example of that is me trying to paint a house, and I painted one in August and I shouldn't have done it, and next time I'm definitely going to employ a painter and get them to do it because that's what they do on a regular basis.
You're way too busy to be painting houses, John. I think you've got other activities that would be more dollar productive than painting a house.
And as someone close to me said, i.e. my wife, what is your per hour worth? Mm. And it's not use of good time painting a house. So, any case, that was just my personal example, but I hear it every day. And if we haven't got the mindset to pay that sort of money, and it's got to be reasonable, it's got to be reasonable amounts spent for reward gained, it needs to be factored into what we're doing.
For sure. Now, this whole episode's come about because we've sort of culminated a series of questions that came through in a recent Facebook post I put up asking for your questions. Now, Daniel Quinn asked the question, using a buyer's agent, aka I am too lazy to do the research and I'd rather pay someone to do it so I don't make serious errors. Are they worth the cost? Which is sort of the whole basis of this episode, right? And there's some other questions that sort of follow and deep dive more. But yeah, it's okay to be lazy to do the research. Not everyone wants to crunch numbers and learn about new areas. They just want to know from someone they trust, where is the best area to buy for what I want to achieve? What does that property look like? And can you go and get it for me?
Yeah, and it I think we said at the start, it may not be lazy. It might just be I'm doing something else and I don't want to prioritize it because it's not an interest of mine or a specialty. I don't have the time. So there's many reasons as to why we would use one. But to ask whether it's worth the cost, a lot of outsourcing and a lot of professionals, it's really hard to actually understand what it was worth. And what are we judging that on? Is it, okay, did I get a discount because I engaged in a buyer's agent? Did I get an off-market property that enabled me to get a better deal? Did I prevent buying an absolute dud that wasn't going to perform? None of that is we can't really quantify what it is worth.
Yeah, and I think there also comes into play the experience piece as well. You know, there's often professions that charge hundreds of dollars for 20 minutes of their time, but it's not the 20 minutes you're paying for. It's all the hours that they have done and all the training they've done to be able to do what they do in the 20 minutes. Now, I'm not saying you use a buyer's agent in 20 minutes, but, you know, for example, like a dentist, they've been through a lot of training. You'd always get a big dental bill at the end, but, you know, you want someone who knows what they're doing when you go to the dentist. Totally. So that's also hard to quantify. And also around the word cost, I would definitely see any outsourcing as an investment. Yes, you know, there is a dollar tag attached to it, but it's an investment. And I think even just shaping your mindset around the fact that that is what it is can be a bit of an aha moment in the process as well.
Yeah, totally. And you talk there about you're paying for the years of experience and the what's been built up over that journey for that person to have that amount of knowledge to be able to empower onto you to get the job done as a buyer's agent in any industry. And I was in personal training for a while and it was rogue with 8-week course to be a personal trainer. Let's go in and charge $70 an hour versus someone that's done a degree in exercise science who's been doing it 20 years charging $70 an hour also, right? Which one am I going to go to? Well, of course, I'm going to go to someone who's had the experience and that's where the worth is. So it's understanding what you prioritize and what you value. So is it it's going to save me time? Is it it's going to save me buying the wrong type of property? Is it going to be provide me less stress because I don't know what my strategy is or what it should be? There's a whole range of things. So you need to understand why you're engaging someone in the first place that you can't do it yourself.
Yeah, number of factors that do go into ascertaining the value overall. It is one of those things, though, where you kind of can't quantify it until the transaction's complete. Like you can't sort of preempt what you're going to feel is valuable. But I know a lot of people who have used buyer's agents sort of go, well, I wouldn't buy without one again. And I think that's a key indicator of where they see value is that it was straightforward, they got a great result, save them time, possibly save them money as well. And so they would, you know, repeat that process again. And that's kind of the ultimate testimonial, I guess, of your experience that you feel satisfied at the end.
Absolutely. So going back to Daniel's question, we're not saying, is it worth the cost? Is it worth the investment? I would say to Daniel, well, why can't you do it alone? His response is, I'm too lazy to do the research, or in other terms, I don't have enough of an interest or a passion to go and do the research. Could he go and do the research himself if he had an interest and get a result for him? Absolutely, he could. Do we know if that result's going to be better than using a buyer's agent at the start? Probably not. We'll know in 5 years or 10 years' time based on what his strategy need to be to begin with.
Yeah, correct. Also just want to touch on there's a bit of a misconception in using a buyer's agent or a buyer's advocate that you have to have a certain purchase price to use one. I just was looking through some other questions and it just made me think to clarify that your purchase price really shouldn't dictate whether you do or don't use one because the process is the same regardless of the purchase price. However, if your reference point has been the media or even shows on TV that have advocates bidding, you know, on really large purchases, really big properties or really even big investments, you might have this sort of myth in your head that you can only use one if you're buying a lot of property or buying a property that is a really high purchase price. And that's really not the case. There's so many advocates and buyer's agents that buy properties, you know, circa 500K is their sort of go-to price point, and people happily engage them to do that. So just be aware that don't rule yourself out of being able to use one based on your purchase price is what I'm trying to say. I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah, absolutely they do. And I think the what I tend to see is if someone's buying their first property, they've taken a considerable amount of time to come up with a deposit. And if it is a smaller, lower price point, if it's say, I don't know, $300,000, and they've worked hard to save their $30,000 plus stamps, whatever it might be, or $60,000, to then come up with another 10-15K as a buyer's advocate or buyer's agent is just not possible unless they save for another 6 months, right? So I do get that side of it, absolutely. That's different from how, the mindset of saying, I'm not prepared to use a buyer's agent because my purchase price is only $400,000.
Yeah, correct. So one of the benefits of, I guess, using particularly a buyer's agent who is investor-focused. Now, just to clarify, John is a lot more investor-focused than I am. I'm more of the emotional, touchy-feely stuff to do with home buying and holding your hand through the process and finding properties in a very specific area. John and his team at Envisage are a lot more on the ground in multiple areas buying investment properties and being a bit more investor-focused. So one of the benefits of looking at an investment advocate who actually buys across multiple states flows into a question from Adrian around is there a better state to buy in when you consider things like tax and stamp duty? Someone who is a great buyer's agent would be across all those nuances in the different markets that could benefit the investor or hinder the investor in their purchase. So there's a lot of things you have to know, right? In your space, John, you really have to be across a lot of legislation.
You do, and you need to have a lot of different reference points like ABS, you need your centre starter, you need your local council regulations and your state amendments. You need to understand all of the micro indicators that we look for when we're buying property across a whole range of areas. So it does take a lot of time to do that. But I suppose once you understand certain areas, and once you've been in those locations for long enough, you already know the basics and the foundation of that particular area, but you then just keep up to date with the trends and what's happening, like your days on market and your number of properties under offer and what the median prices are doing and what's selling and all those sort of things. But I suppose the good thing about looking across multiple states, multiple locations, is you get to see compared to what, and that's the massive benefit that I see is that when we're looking at, I don't know, let's say Wagga, and we buy something in Wagga for $500,000. That's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2-car on 500 squares. Where else can I buy that of similar populated town with an airport and a university? And that gives me a litmus test for, okay, is this good buying or is it overpriced or is it underpriced? And based on the heat of the market as to whether I go and research in that area or not. So there's a whole range of things that you almost can't put down on paper. If you were to write a book on it, it's really hard to actually write, these are the steps I'd go through. And I'm training some buyer's agents at the moment and I'm doing my best to get out of my head and into their heads just the way we go about it. And sometimes you can't fast track experience and you need to get your hands dirty. And that's why I love giving them these action steps and little projects to say, right, go and research this area. Tell me what you're finding. And then we'll come back and spitball that. So if you've really got a passion for property, you can do that. But you can't do that if you're just simply looking in one suburb or two suburbs in your little patch.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a follow-up question from that around, you know, being an investor-driven advocate or buyer's agent. Is there sort of a sweet spot of the minimum number of areas that you would cover? Like ideally, how many would you be covering at any one time to make sure an investor's getting a diverse spread of choice where they could put their money?
Yeah, look, we're probably at the minute, and it obviously depends on the clients and the price point. We look at price points around the country and say, or not in every state, by the way, but we look at and say, righto, if we've got $1 million client, where are the best three locations in Australia to put them right now? If we've got an 800K client, where are they going to be? If 600, 400, et cetera. And if we've got someone that needs 4% yield, this is where we're going. If they need 5% gross yield, this is where we're going to shortlist to. So where it's not a case of let's just identify a location and let's put everyone into that location and just hope it works out okay. It's marrying up the client's brief and what we think their strategy should be with a number of locations and then shortlisting it from there.
Yeah. And just before we go to a break, I just want to touch on something I was just thinking of as you were speaking then around if someone's outsourcing this process and they're placing the trust in a buyer's agent to get the right property in the right location for their budget. That may well be in an area they've never heard of before, they've never been to before, and it could be completely out of the state that they're even from. It might not even be driving distance for them. And this is not me interviewing you, but I'm asking you a couple of questions. In your experience, how important is it that people remove a barrier of investing where they know?
Yeah, that's a really good one. And that's another episode on itself because it comes down to risk profile.
Yes.
And I chat with my team every Monday morning and we chat about these different things. I'm experiencing a client that's doing this, and this, and I've got one who's doing that and whatever else. And we can spitball these things, which is powerful. But at the end of the day, they're the one that's buying the property. We've put the research to them. We've created the strategy for them and we've presented, let's say, three or four different locations. Now, they're organically going to say one of two things. Yeah, I'd like this town or suburb over the other three. Let's go with that. Or I wouldn't have a clue. You're the expert. I'll buy where you tell me to buy sort of thing. And that's a high risk profile. It's like, well, I'm borderless as an investor. Doesn't bother me where we go. Whereas others will have some sort of barriers because that's just the way they're wired and that's their sleep at night factor. So understanding the risk profile of the individual long before we start their strategy is really key.
So circling back on Daniel's question around are they worth the cost, which we've now changed to are they worth the investment, because that's what we think it should be.
That's right.
Is that in itself being in a completely different state potentially, having a team on the ground that, you know, that's not you having to fly there, get accommodation, go and see the property, would also be one of those things that come into investing in a BA when you are buying. So lots of things to consider in this. We've got a bit more to unpack. We're going to take a quick moment and we'll be right back with you.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click get help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click get help.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So before we expand more on the BA, you mentioned at the start, Emily, a property professional. They can come in different shapes and forms. So most people would think a property professional might actually be a real estate agent.
Yeah, for sure.
So on the buying side, it's a buyer's agent. On the selling side, it's a real estate agent. But you're not really engaging you're engaging them for obviously different reasons, but one's got a different level of expertise than the other. And what I started 10 years ago was a property coaching business, which is neither of those, and it's a conduit to all of it. So that's for the I call them the property nerds out there that just want to absorb as much information as they can, and they're not control freaks, but they definitely want to take action, getting their own hands dirty. So that's a situation where it actually doesn't require a buyer's agent. It requires a whole bunch of knowledge, using someone to fast track that knowledge and not go through and make the mistakes over a 20-year period and say, well, if I knew that back then, I would have done this a lot differently.
It's like a hybrid, really, isn't it? The involvement, the client is quite involved in that process, but they're leaning on an expertise to make sure they've got the right advice to select and purchase the right property, and long-term have a great property plan in place too, because they might be someone who's got multiple investments and need to understand how that unfolds on a financial level, investment level, all those sorts of things as well.
Yeah, for sure. It's like a traineeship over 12 months, or that's how mine is anyway. But I'm sure there's a lot out there that do offer some sort of coaching, but some people might not be comfortable with the words property coaching. It's like, what the hell is that? Because it's not as common out there as say, a buyer's agent or a real estate agent.
Yeah, correct. And I think that kind of circles round to a couple of key characteristics to be aware of when engaging a buyer's agent. And so also just side note, love a side note, buyer's agent, buyer's advocate, same thing. It's just that I'm used to saying advocate because in Melbourne it's a lot more common, where John up in New South Wales, agent is more common as the terminology. So they're one of the same. And sometimes I just say BA because it's easier, because then we're covering both. So if you're confused about the interchanging term, it's they're the same. Sometimes I just listen to John say buyer's agent, so I roll with that for a while. Sometimes I
just roll with whatever we're feeling. Yeah.
But the point is, when you are selecting a buyer's agent to represent you in buying a property, there are some minimum sort of standards. Now, I will say and preface this, and I think John will agree with me, and feel free to disagree, but the industry does need a little bit more regulation around it. It's a little bit loose at the moment. And the reason for that is, or at least I think the reason is, it's not as common as a real estate agent, and it's certainly nowhere near as common as the US model, where pretty much everyone engages help to purchase a property. They have a professional on their side. In Australia, particularly because it's a relatively new concept to the majority, whilst buyer's agents are involved a lot more in purchasing and the percentage of purchases with one of them involved is getting higher and higher, it would still be well and truly under 10%. And because of that, I don't think there's been enough of an industry movement to then have a baseline of education specific to a buyer's agent. Bit of an insight is, in order to be a buyer's agent, and I think John would have had to do the same, I had to get a full real estate license, but everything I learned in the real estate license was all to do with being a real estate agent, not a buyer's agent. So it kind of felt like I was, you know, going through a process to get accredited, but I didn't even feel super accredited in what I was about to do. So there is a little bit of a gap in education, and I think we will see some reform and some benchmarks to come in the next maybe 3 to 5 years, I'd guess. But at this moment in time, there are some key criteria to tick off when you're engaging someone to make sure you're getting a good standard. The first one would be, actually, before I go into it, John, do you agree with what I've said?
Yeah, I do agree, Emily. And I think I used the personal trainer reference, the whole get a certificate in 8 weeks and go and charge 70 an hour. it's not too dissimilar in the buyer's agent space, where you do have to work under someone once you get that real estate certificate. The real estate certificate gives you next to nothing in the terms of knowledge to become a buyer's agent. I would encourage getting a mortgage broker certificate just to understand the finances structure as well. But that's the dangerous thing about any industry. When you can go and get a qualification in 8, 12 weeks or work at your own pace and do it online in 2 days, that's a concern for me. And that presents issues now but down the track. And if people can see, oh, yeah, I could be a buyer's agent in 3 months and charge X amount, then that's when the industry goes rogue, doesn't it? So there needs to be, like anything, some changes to be made there, but it's a long old process to overhaul something like that versus somewhere like, okay, I want to be a teacher, you need to go to university for four years.
Yeah, it was a lot more involved to become a teacher, probably you and I both, hey, to get our qualification to be in education than it was to be a BA.
Yeah, but the same thing, like, you know, as a teacher, you get the most experience and knowledge from actually going into the classroom and working with 30 rugrats, whereas a buyer's agent, no different. If you haven't bought and sold property yourself, that's a red flag. I'm sure we'll get to this stuff. But if you haven't done a lot of that, then that's lack of experience and knowledge. And if you didn't get it in your training or education to get your degree or certificate, then we've got a concern.
Yeah, for sure. So in terms of some markers of sort of minimum standards, number one, they obviously have to be a registered agent. And that may come in the form of a full license if they're a solo operator, or it might be in the form of like a sub license or a little certificate that they've done to operate under someone who has a full license. So there would be that component. There would also be professional indemnity insurance would be definitely something that a buyer's advocate would need to operate. And then there's probably some criteria around things that are hard to measure, but questions that you can ask, i.e. track record. You know, where have you been buying and what results have you been getting for your clients, particularly on the investor side of things? The equivalent on more of the home buying side of things, in my opinion, would be around the agent relationships in the certain areas that they have to be able to get off markets quickly and have insight as to what's coming up in the market as well. And then there would also be the sort of verification check of past clients. What do their testimonials look like? Can they speak to a past client who maybe was in a similar position to them and have a chat with them on the phone, or at least, you know, exchange a message to verify their experience? Just like you would when you're engaging any professional, you would do some key checks. And I think there's one that's probably quite immeasurable, which is, do I actually get along with this person and trust this person? Because you're going to be spending a fair bit of time communicating with them, right?
Totally. Yeah, that is a key one, is to know that you can relate to that person because you are going on a journey together. So yeah, that's a key component, I think.
And just back on the qualification side of things, there's also a voluntary qualification that you can do in the space. It's probably the only real one available, which I've nearly completed and John's company currently has, which is known as PIPA, which is Property Investment Professionals Australia. And the qualification is QPIPA, which is a Qualified Property Investment Professional. And that's actually a series of modules that takes you through more on the investing side of property, but talks about some best practices, goes through some key information around, you know, state legislation, government, councils, all these things that form part of your knowledge in the investment space. It's a qualification that you can get and go through. And I think particularly on the investor side of buying property, it's a helpful one to have.
Yeah, I think it's another tick box, isn't it, to know that, okay, if I'm lacking experience, I can go and do something like that again to fast track some of my experience and knowledge, or not experience, but I can fast track some of my knowledge so that I'm better equipped to handle clients of all different criteria, I suppose. So, yeah, I wholeheartedly, we need to be able to get that qualification as best we can in the most elaborate form, right? So if the most elaborate form right now is probably doing a commerce degree, right, and or a Bachelor of Economics, right? Now that's going to take a good chunk of time out of your life, which most people would say, well, why would I when I can go and do this buyer's agent course online? But from a client point of view, who are we looking for when we employ someone to act as a buyer's agent on our behalf? I think it's a combination of experience, what have you done, how long have you been doing it, and can I relate with this team or this person as a group? Would you say that they're the top two?
Yeah, I definitely say that they are the top two that I would be looking for as a consumer. And then I think largely the rest of it speaks for itself in terms of, you know, reviews, track record, that sort of thing. You can deep dive into that more, but those would be the two priorities for sure. So there's probably a clear definition of what a buyer's agent or buyer's advocate really does in terms of sourcing, inspecting, negotiating properties and advising you on the best option possible. What's interesting in the space is, and when I say the space, I mean the industry of buyer's agents. I have seen, and this comes off the back of a question from Tom. Tom has said that he's been seeing a lot of YouTube promotions around some summits and courses in the property space to look into rental cash flow more. Some of the titles are around how to get an Airbnb portfolio of 50 houses, how to buy 30 houses in 12 months. Tom has sort of said, well, aren't these scams and are they outdated? And also, how is this not regulated? Similar to how the Finfluencers were targeted, and that happened sort of last year, it sounds dangerous to be following their advice. Now, I get these promotional ads all the time, probably because, and you might see them too, John, just because the nature of searching property in Google, it's, you know, it's listening to you, so it sends you stuff that you might want to see. But It's a little bit alarming that these are effectively marketing headlines to get people in. That's how I read them. It's a marketing tool.
Yeah. So I think if you've got to ask yourself, where's the information coming from and what's their angle? And is it a genuine angle? Okay. So 30 houses in 12 months, is that practical? Wholeheartedly, no. It's not, unless we've got an untapped amount of cash at our disposal and not the ability to have to lend, okay? So if we look at that, that's a red flag straight away, right? Random people selling courses, running summits on rental cash flow, how to get an Airbnb portfolio of 50 houses. Now, as a 20-something-year-old, I would go along to those events with open eyes and look at it and take notes and understand the key concepts and try to look through the front and find the back end of what's actually going on here. Where are we buying it? How are we doing it? Who are the clients that have achieved these results and how did it come about, right? I mean, it sounds too good to be true. As we always say, it probably is. But there's some intrigue that says, I'm going to find out anyway. Because if there's something out there that's better than what I'm doing, I'm open for it. We just need to understand what it is, and it's not just a marketing ploy to get your name and number and email address to then pump you with more marketing material to the point where I don't know any different, I'm in.
My biggest question around anyone that's hosting these webinars or seminars, whatever they might be, is do they actually do this themselves? Like, does the person holding this webinar own 50 Airbnbs and know what it's like on the ground to manage that and be privy to that? That's probably the key question I would be asking. And as John rightly said, go there with an open mind. You might learn something, but I think be very aware that there's a lot of marketing tactics involved in these things. And I really think this applies to really any service-based business, but recommendations from people you trust are more often than not the best way to go when it comes to engaging a professional. Getting involved in these marketing ploys that sound good but maybe don't deliver could be dangerous. So if it were me, even like little things, like when I've gone to, I wanted a new chiropractor, I just asked around my neighbors, like, who do you guys use? Yeah. You know, it's simple as that. Get a trusted recommendation.
Yeah. Okay. So question to you, Emily, would you go to an event like this that was advertised? A free event, going to run for an hour in your local neighborhood. Would you go and sit in?
I'm the sort of person who would sit there and be really like annoyed or like be smirking because I kind of know how they unfold. I would go there with intrigue, yes, but I'd probably only attend one and I'd be over it.
Mm. So I was all over this stuff in the, as I said, in my 20s, like I couldn't get enough of it. But I went in with enough knowledge and enough eyes wide open to say, well, yeah, you can have my details because I want to find out more about you, but I'm not going to commit to wholly and solely to investing into something until I know exactly what's going on. So I'd encourage you, everyone out there listening, not to just dismiss all this and not to go and do it either, but just to go and find out about these little, I don't want to say scams, but opportunities out there to broaden your horizons, to know what not to do. Because once you find out what not to do, it's much easier to find out what to do.
That's a very valid point. And yeah, the more you filter through, the clearer it becomes when you're onto a good thing as well.
Totally. Yeah. And when all of a sudden you get a phone call from a telemarketer talking about this, like my wife really makes really gets annoyed with me when I continue to talk to telemarketers and I find out what they're up to and what it is that they're trying to sell and everything else. And I talk to them for 3 or 4 minutes, not all the time, but when I've got a little bit of time up my sleeve, and I find out some things, bits and pieces. I don't get sucked into what they're trying to do, but it's learning. And we take one thing away, like you mentioned before, we're more well-rounded to make better decisions down the track.
Yeah, for sure. Just rounding out this conversation on a more specific example of something that one of my Instagram followers actually put a question across this morning, Melissa. So Melissa has come across a buyer's agent strategy that the marketing is largely around purchasing properties in Brisbane on like a block that's large enough to subdivide with a granny flat out the back. And she specifically asked for your thoughts on this. So she said that the company that's doing it, they've outlined their numbers on their YouTube channel. She really loves their content, but wants your opinion, John, on what you think about subdividing with a granny flat on the back and what the opportunity is. Is this something that you've done yourself or have done for clients? Would you recommend it?
So whatever the company is promoting, it's a strategy. The concern I've got is, does that strategy fit you, the individual? And I spoke before about aligning strategy with client, not client to a particular strategy. And I think that's really important when you're building a portfolio is where we're taking all things into account, we're taking all strategies into account, and then we're shortlisting it to the right strategy that's going to work for you. So I'd ask Melissa, do you think this strategy works for you? If you didn't see the numbers on the page, do you think that this strategy of house and granny flat works for you in Brisbane? Does this company do this alone, or does it offer buying existing without the granny flat? Do we not build anything? Is it just, do we buy existing property, or is that our niche? Do we just go and do that? So a company that just simply does that as a niche, I wouldn't necessarily call a buyer's agent. I'd just call that's what they do as a specialty, right? Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. That sounds like they're just focused on one strategy. And in order to be a proactive buyer's agent, you wouldn't just have one size fits all. Don't get me wrong. I think there's merit in being a specialist for sure, but you'd have to be very willing to say that our strategy doesn't actually fit what you want to do. So here's another company who does what you want to do. I think that probably would be the best way forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, Melissa, not trying to say that granny flats are no good, by the way. I'm just saying all strategies work, but which one does suit you as the individual? And we probably don't know that on a Facebook ad. So it's, again, marketing to get us in, which is great. We can follow these people and understand more about different options out there.
Yeah, for sure. I think we've covered off most of the questions that related to buyer's agents specifically. Is there anything you wanted to add, John, when people are looking into engaging a buyer's agent or just more generally around having a buyer's agent on your side?
Look, I think as some of those who have written in have witnessed, it's a wild world out there and there's a lot of marketing going on, and there'll be even more marketing when there's less clients coming through their door. So you've got to really strap yourself in and just keep those eyes wide open and just ask yourself, what is it that I need? What can't I do myself, and what do I think I need to outsource? And I think you can navigate your way through it that way. But it doesn't hurt just to have a conversation with a potential buyer's agent that you're looking at, or even if you don't think you'll use one, it's not bad to get a different perspective.
Yeah, for sure. Can always learn something. We're always learning.
Yes, absolutely we are.
That is pretty much it for today's episode. Hopefully that's given you a bit of an insight as to what to look for when engaging a buyer's agent, when you would, and certainly some ideas around the fact that there's a particular strategy for you and getting that strategy right is really, really key in your property journey success. So thanks for tuning in today. We continue to try and provide an array of content so that it gets a bit, you know, mixed up between Q&As and listener stories and all that sort of thing. If you have a particular topic you'd like us to cover, please let us know. And if it's your first time listening today, thanks for tuning in. Might be a lot of people do write to us and say that they listen to one and they've gone back and like started from the start, which I don't know how long that would take to do now. That would be weeks, weeks. But yeah, if you do that, then thank you for listening.
Gold star.
And if you've been a long time listener, don't forget to leave us a little review if you get a chance. That would make our day.
Preferably good reviews. No, we like to have constructive feedback, but throw us a 5 if you think we're worthy.
Yeah, for sure. We would love to hear from you. So until next time, have a great week ahead.
We acknowledge the Awabakal people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
Taking your property journey to the next level starts with education.
That's why we make this podcast, but we've also created online courses to equip you with the knowledge you need to take the next steps.
I've created the Solvair Online Academy, open to both first home buyers and seasoned investors, where I share my tips and experience from 20 years in the property space.
And if you're a first home buyer, I have the course just for you. Everything from pre-approval all the way through into your settlement and everything in between. How to place an offer, how to bid at auction, what to even look for at an open home, and what questions to ask the agents. It's all covered in my online course.
Follow the links in the show notes to sign up and get started today.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.